Welcome to Radioactive Magazine. We will be talking with Professors Brian Hollenbeck and Michael Smith at Emporia State on understanding gerrymandering. Hollenbeck is the lead author of a chapter on using mathematics to understand how gerrymandering affects partisan voting power in a new book on Much Sound and Fury or the New Jim Crow, edited by Smith. It is scheduled to start shipping on July 2, according to Amazon. So, what is gerrymandering? Either one of you.
All right. I'll give an overview, and then Dr. Hollenbeck might want to give us a little bit more of a mathematical answer. But gerrymandering, and there is a push by the family of former Vice President Elbridge Gerry to pronounce it gerrymandering, but we'll see. By whatever name, when the drawing of districts, for example, for the United States Congress or for state legislature, city council, what have you, when it's deliberately manipulated to advantage some group or disadvantage some group, and those generally go hand in hand, could be a political party, for example. Pack your opponents into just a few districts so you control the others. There's racial gerrymandering, long history of racial gerrymandering, both to minimize representation of people of color and to increase it in this country. The gerrymandering to increase racial representation is, of course, more recent. But anytime you're deliberately manipulating how a district is drawn, it may produce districts that look really funny and contorted on a map, or it may not. You can't always tell gerrymandering just by looking at a map, but that's kind of just a general definition.
So, Professor Hollenbeck, would you care to add to that?
You know, I think the first thing I would say is on this issue is people, I think, generally have two thoughts, is that they want districts to be drawn in an unbiased way, and they want the outcome to be what they perceive to be fair. And that's where the mathematics comes in, is analyzing, you know, is there a nonpartisan drawing of the map, and is the outcome fair enough?
So how does gerrymandering compare in relative importance relative to other concerns about electoral integrity, like people voting illegally, the issue that Republicans have made a major issue of over the past decade or so or three?
That one probably falls in my area. Many of those concerns, for example, about undocumented immigrants voting are baseless. A good example being former Secretary of State Kris Kobach in Kansas, now seeking the attorney general seat, won the power to prosecute voter fraud and found only a handful of cases in 8 years of searching. And some of those cases he ended up dropping. And most all but, I believe, one or two of the others had nothing to do with immigrants, and none of them had to do with undocumented immigrants. On the other hand, gerrymandering is a really serious representational issue because even before they had computers, it's possible to manipulate districts so that, for example, a state with about 41% of supporters of a political party, say Democrats in Kansas or Missouri, can have little to no representation because of the way the districts are drawn. And again, there's this long and ugly history of racial gerrymandering, which for many years ensured that African-Americans had little to no representation at all, even where in states where they constituted up to a third the population.
That's interesting. So Professor Hollenbeck, why don't you summarize your chapter for our listeners?
Sure. So let me hit on the first point that I made earlier first, and that's this idea of, are the map lines drawn in an unbiased or, let's say, a nonpartisan way? And one way to analyze that mathematically is through this idea of compactness. And mathematics actually has multiple measures of compactness of a shape. And the idea would be is that the more circuitous and strangely drawn of a boundary, that would penalize the compactness score, where a score of one would be perfectly compact and a score of zero would be the worst. And so one could give a numerical value to the shape of any particular district. Now, the problem, of course, with this is that the constitution, I guess, says that some bias, some manipulation of boundaries is okay, that it's that the problem is when a party takes that too far. And so then it becomes a bit more arbitrary of what is the boundary line between, what is the threshold for being too manipulated? Another challenge is that there isn't just one mathematical measure of compactness. There's multiple ways. Because if you think about, it's not such an issue maybe in Kansas or Colorado or Wyoming, but if you think about some of our states where they have a seashore that naturally twists and turns, then a district along that coastline is going to naturally have a long perimeter, which could penalize it, even though there's no manipulation involved. And there's ways around that, but it's still a pitfall that folks need to be aware of before they can just arbitrarily assign this measure. The other side of this is the one of fairness, is that, like Michael was saying, if 41% or maybe even 48% of a state votes one way, then, and there's four districts or 10 districts, however many there might be, then people kind of feel like there should be a proportional representation when the district lines are drawn. And mathematically, we can analyze that through this idea of wasted votes and the efficiency gap. And so we can look at that and then see if that matches our expectation of that proportionality. Of course, the downside there is that it's been ruled in the past by the Supreme Court that proportionality doesn't have to be upheld in these lines, that parties, you know, individuals have rights, but parties don't have rights. And so we can't necessarily use that as the only criteria.
Corporations do. Corporations are people, right? And humans sure. are second-class citizens. Sorry, go ahead.
Sure. So we have two mathematical tools to help us measure these things. But the third challenge is that sometimes those two goals can actually be contradictory. That if you want to have a district map that is drawn so you get a fair outcome, you might actually need a bizarrely shaped district to achieve that. Or on the flip side, if you draw lines that are very natural and compact, then the outcome may not seemingly be fair at all. And there's even a mathematical theorem that's been proven a few years ago that states that this is always going to be a challenge, that you can't get around that that reality that sometimes these are contradictory. So the third thing we talk about in the book is maybe another way out is through simulation. Is that, well, what if we just simulate maps, all possible maps, or probably all possible maps isn't possible, but at least a good collection of maps, and then see where does a particular map that has been proposed, where does that fall in the spectrum of those simulated maps? And if it seems to be an outlier, then that would seem to be an indication of a problem. But again, there's a challenge there because depending on how you define what you're simulating, you can get very different conclusions.
Yeah. I want to jump in here and add one thing really quickly, which Brian mentioned, that it's very difficult to prove partisan gerrymandering in the federal courts now, especially since a ruling called Rucho v. Common Cause in 2019. So this year, the increasing turn is toward the state courts. Folks are going to court alleging that gerrymandering denies their rights to equal representation under their state constitutions.
And that's happening in Kansas, is that right?
It is happening in Kansas. That's correct. And actually, I am an expert witness to one of those lawsuits. It's being heard by the Kansas Supreme Court this week. I can describe the map for you, but I can't go too much further than that in detailing the cases. But I encourage your readers to stay up on it because it's really pretty fascinating, and your listeners.
And it's not just fascinating, it's vital to democracy, small d, in Kansas. Am I right?
I absolutely agree. It ultimately determines how folks are represented for the next 10 years. whatever position you take on it, I have my own personal opinions, but you know, your listeners are smart people that form their own opinions. They might want to Google the map. It's called Ad Astra II, the number two, named after, of course, the Kansas State motto, Ad Astra II. And it's an interesting map. For example, it puts Lawrence in the district, which we call the Big First, in central and western Kansas that goes all the way to Colorado. It's got this little hook that comes over and picks up Lawrence. And third district, which is the Kansas City area district, currently represented by Sharice Davids. There are a number of changes made to that. Most notably, half of Wyandotte County is removed, and three rural counties are added to the district. Now, again, I better stop there, and I'll let your listeners draw their own conclusions, but it's a very interesting map.
And someone was talking about Kansas, they're talking in Missouri. Missouri currently has 8 seats in the U.S. House, and Kansas has 4 seats in the U.S. House. And we're really talking about the districts for the U.S. House, not any other thing like districts for the state legislatures, right?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. Kansas and Missouri both have the state legislature draw the congressional districts. And Missouri just passed a map the other day at the absolute last minute. And as I mentioned, the Kansas map is currently in the Kansas Supreme Court. Now, they're very different, though. By the way, some states don't do that. Iowa uses a bipartisan commission. California uses a citizens commission that was championed by former Governor Schwarzenegger, who said, these are his words, not mine, that he wants to terminate gerrymandering. Get it? And so Missouri and Kansas are old school. But the interesting thing is for the state house and the state Senate, not U.S. Congress, but the state level, Missouri has bipartisan commissions draw these maps with a backup that if they can't agree, and they have equal numbers of Democrats and Republicans, if they can't agree, then it kicks over to the courts and the courts draw it. This year, the Missouri State House Commission reached agreement and they passed a map. The Senate Commission did deadlock and that kicked over to the courts. But Kansas has the state legislature draw those districts, which does mean that the state legislators are drawing their own districts.
Right. So the legislators select their voters rather than the other way around.
One could argue that.
One could argue. That's an argument that I have heard in the past. Right. So the Missouri map. Now, I've heard talk about the Missouri map. The question is, they currently have Missouri has 8 seats, and Senator Greg Razor, who represents part of Kansas City in Jefferson City, said that, you know, that we're pretty close. We ought to have a 4-4, Democrats and Republicans, or at least 3-5, and we instead have 6-2. And there's been a major food fight in the Missouri Senate this year about, because a number of senators wanted a 7-1 map. So what have we got?
Well, we've got a 6-2. Just the other day, the Missouri Senate has been very, very stuck this session because of a group of very, very hardcore right-wing senators. But they did move a map. And essentially, the Kansas City area district is going to get more compact. It's going to be about the western two-thirds of Jackson County, and then it'll go up into Clay County. Very different from the current 5th district, which does not include a big portion of eastern Jackson County. The 6th district dips down into that, but then the current 5th district winds its way east and goes all the way to Sedalia. And so this new 5th district will be a lot more compact. The fighting was mostly in the St. Louis area. Part of it was communities of interest, which is a huge term in the redistricting community. You're not supposed to cut up communities of interest like cities, counties, school districts, and so forth any more than necessary. St. Charles County wanted to be kept whole in a district. They did not get that, and so forth. Another issue is the district in St. Louis. The first is what we call a majority-minority district, meaning that a people of color constitute a majority of people in that district. That's the district represented by Cami Bush. Those districts have special protections under the Voting Rights Act amendments of 1990. So you can't break up a majority-minority district. And so there was a lot of fighting over St. Louis. And if you look around there and all the way into central Missouri, the map's kind of messy. But the other thing they wanted to do is make the congressional district represented by Ann Wagner a bit more Republican, which they did. The map's a bit messy. The district around Kansas City is actually one of the neater ones. It's the eastern part that's a bit thrown together, but they did get a map passed.
Interesting. So we are discussing gerrymandering or gerrymandering with Professors Brian Hollenbeck and Michael Smith at Emporia State. So what's the origin of the term gerrymandering?
Well, I'll jump in again here. It's named for a vice president of the United States, Elbridge Gerry. He was from Massachusetts. He supported the Democratic Republican Party, which was one of our first two parties, along with the Federalists. And he was from the Boston area. And he drew a district that was very contorted. Now, remember, he didn't have any computers. He didn't have any algorithms to use to draw this. He did it with, I assume, a pen and paper. He drew a pretty contorted district in counties around Boston that was designed to take two districts, which if they had been drawn in a way that was more compact, would probably both be Federalist, and make one of the two favor his party, the Democratic Republican one, which he contorted around the heavily Federalist precincts. And a cartoonist came along, put the head of a dragon on it and some wings and claws, and named it a gerrymander. The term salamander is an archaic term for dragon. So the literal meaning of gerrymander is Gary's dragon. And again, I would encourage your listeners to use a search engine and look it up. You can see a picture of the original gerrymander. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. There's a Wikipedia article on that. Right. Yeah. Elbridge Gerry signed both the Declaration of Independence and the Articles of Confederation. I looked him up. He refused to sign our current Constitution because it did not include a Bill of Rights. Okay, and I thought that was interesting. And
that's so right.
Remind our listeners of what the courts have said about gerrymandering.
Well, one of the most recent federal rulings was Rucho, and essentially what they ruled is that there is no objective definition of gerrymandering. And they then leapt from that to arguing, therefore, generally speaking, partisan gerrymandering is not justiciable. That is, the courts generally are going to stay out. Now, of course, with judicial federalism, this says nothing about the state courts. And we've had numerous cases in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, North Carolina, and now Kansas, where it has been litigated under the state constitutions. Partisan gerrymandering is different. It's protected by different civil rights laws, and it is more gerrymandering. I'm sorry, racial gerrymandering is what I meant to say. Racial gerrymandering is still justiciable. Partisan gerrymandering is a hard call in the federal courts, but the state courts still may have jurisdiction depending on the state constitution. Now, Brian can speak a little bit more about why it is so difficult to get an objective partisan or an objective definition of gerrymandering.
Sure, I can give an example from the simulation idea. One thing we did in the book was we analyzed Iowa, and because Iowa's is pretty simple, they draw their lines based on county lines. They require their districts to be contiguous. And so that is something that is fairly easy to program and simulate. And the interesting thing is that you can think about it a couple of ways. Is if you think about what would be the most nonpartisan way of dividing people in the four districts, was if you just randomly assigned every household in the state into into one of four districts. Now that wouldn't satisfy the county line contiguous criteria, but it would be the most fair because there would be no bias whatsoever. And at least in the last presidential election, I believe Iowa voted about 52% for Trump. And so if you use that criteria, and if you think about, you know, how many people are in Iowa and divide them up into four districts, equal districts, number of people, then what you find is that basically you will almost always get a 4-0 split for Republicans, because that's just the nature of when you have that many people, right? Even a slim majority for the party will get that advantage. In fact, in that court case, they even referenced that fact. And they, I think, even harkened back to the early days of our country when that was actually how states sent their representatives, to the Capitol, was the majority party just dominate, you know, sent the entire slate. So what happens, though, if you change the simulation? What if you say, all right, we're actually going to be more biased in a sense, that we're going to use county lines to determine the districts, and we're also going to make the districts be relatively equal in population. That's known as the one person, one vote stipulation. So we assume 50,000 people is the maximum gap there between districts and the contiguousness criteria. And when you simulate it that way, then 81% of the time, you're going to get a 2-2 split between the two parties, at least between Republican versus not Republican, is how we analyzed it. And that 4-0 split that happens almost 100% of the time now happens closer to 0.1% of the time. So it's a real challenge of how do you decide what is the proper simulation? Because, again, the most nonpartisan is actually the least fair. And we see that in other situations as well.
And that happens because basically the different counties are not homogeneous, right? You get, while Iowa is 52% Republican statewide, there are some counties that are 60% Republican and others that are where there are only 40%. Am I interpreting that correctly?
Right. Normally, you hear terms like packing and cracking as negative terms, that the party, you know, the party that's drawing the map is packing the minority party into one district, or they're cracking them. They're distributing them across several districts to kind of dilute the voting power of that minority party. But in one sense, that is actually beneficial because, and Kansas is a good example of this, is that there's, of course, a lot of Democrat voters in the Kansas City area. And since they're all concentrated in that area, then actually packing all those voters into one district is more likely to guarantee a Democrat representative in that district than if you spread them all out evenly, like you would if it was completely randomly assigned.
Right. And so if I remember from a earlier comment, this Ad Astra II map, by the way, the state motto of Kansas is Ad Astra per Aspera, to the stars through difficulty in Latin, I think. Am I right about that?
I do believe so.
Great. So this is Ad Astra II, and it's cracks Wyandotte County separate from Johnson County. So don't quote me on this, we'll look up the map and check for yourself, right? But in any case, Professor Hollenbeck, you're the chair of mathematics and economics. Why do you care about gerrymandering? That sounds like a political thing.
So, you know, one thing that we see in math is that it permeates every aspect of life, and seeing how it ties into political sciences, you know, is exciting to me. And when Michael Smith asked me several years ago to help collaborate with him on the book, I'd already been talking about some of these ideas in one of the math classes I teach. And so I was happy to join him and even learn some new things. So it's always interesting to see how math relates to various parts of life. And of course, gerrymandering is certainly an important part these days.
All right. Professor Smith, you're the chair of social sciences, sociology, and criminology. Does Emporia State have a separate political sciences department?
We don't. We are part of a larger department, and that works for us at a university this size. And we're very proud of our students, our pre-law programs, our pre-public administration, and everything you could get at a larger university.
Great. And so what did you do as editor for this book?
Well, it was a whole new experience for me. The old joke about herding cats kind of fits here. Not Dr. Hollenbeck. He was really easy to work with, but we had a few last minute stragglers. Before the pandemic, a group of us met at a political science conference in Chicago from different universities. We were all working on this. We were very concerned about some of the restrictive new voting laws, like the ones you mentioned, Spencer, photo ID, proof of citizenship, aggressively gerrymandering different districts, voter caging, where you pick certain voters, send them a postcard. If they don't return it, you take them off the voter rolls. And so we thought, well, what if we each collaborated and took our specialties? Oh, felony disenfranchisement is another one. Take our specialties and we could each do a chapter and then put it together into a book. And we like this idea. We've been working on it since 2015. And then I decided, I thought gerrymandering, really, we didn't have anybody for that. And Brian and I go to some of the same meetings and so forth. I talked to him and to our friend, Deborah Han, a geographer, and I believe we have what may be the first book chapter on gerrymandering co-authored by a mathematician and a geographer. Uh-huh. And by the way, I have to do a quick plug. The book is now coming out in paperback. So your listeners can now afford it if they wish to purchase it.
Good, 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 good. That's great. So is it available or is just to be released? I on Amazon, I looked and it said available July 2. Did I have that misunderstanding?
The paperback, yes. You can pre-order it now.
Oh, that's the paperback.
It's going into print. Yes, you can order the hardback, which is a little on the pricier side, but we hope that you'll ask your local library to carry it because this topic's important and we want to get the word out. And then for your personal use, we've got that paperback coming on July 1st.
And the hardback and the hardback came out what in January?
Correct. That is correct.
Okay. Okay.
Yes.
Now, yeah. That. Oh, thanks. What's your favorite horror story about gerrymandering?
I'll mention one. I don't know if it's a horror story, but I think it's kind of interesting and shows how these things can go. Is there was a court that ruled on Pennsylvania that and actually denied the complaint about how the lines were drawn that gave, oh, I forget, Republicans something like I forget the numbers, maybe like a 10 to 8 advantage, let's say. And then a few years later, that actually flipped to the other way, where it was actually the Democrats, I believe, had the advantage. And then at the next election, I think they gained another seat. So one has to be careful if they're cracking, right, to gain an advantage, whichever party, that if you spread those votes too thinly or your advantage too thinly, it can actually backfire on you a few years later.
Right. Okay. Well, I think we're basically out of time. We've been talking with Professors Brian Hollenbeck and Michael Smith at Emporia State on understanding gerrymandering. Hollenbeck is the lead author of a chapter on using mathematics to understand gerrymandering. To understand how gerrymandering affects partisan voting power, in a new book on Much Sound and Fury or the New Jim Crow, edited by Smith. The hardback is available, but it's pricey. The paperback is scheduled to start shipping July 2. Tune in next week when I'll be talking with Chris Mann, Kristen Shear, and Charles Carney of Peaceworks Kansas City about the anti-nuke Memorial Day protest. They are planning for the following Monday, May 30th at the Kansas City National Security Campus, 14520 Boss Road, Kansas City, Missouri. And I feel compelled to remind our listeners that volunteers make all the decisions regarding shows aired on KKFI's 24/7 broadcasting schedule. And you can call or write to news@kkfi.org or call KKFI during normal business hours to share ideas, programming ideas. Feel free to mention this show. I'm Spencer Graves. Craig LeBeau at the controls. Thanks for listening.